character, but it's Ennio Morricone's theme called The Ecstasy of Gold. So that seems to be a good intro for the Oscars. So, plus I think Metallica lights that as their intro music. So what the hell? But we'll start off. We asked our panel, before we get into the opinionating, we asked our panel, and going from east to west, Mark Harrington. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Rick.
The famous Barbara Bratz. Hello.
Good morning.
And the ever-loving Linda Jader.
Thank you, Rick. Good morning.
Normally works at the chamber and saying, where's the damn snow?
It's here. It's fine.
It's fine.
Come on out. We were getting more. I skied yesterday. It was great.
It's like Doritos. This will make more snow. But we had asked them before the Oscar ceremonies to submit their Oscar picks, and I just wanted to and they sent in their picks to me individually. The others didn't see what each one of them.
Top secret balloting.
Double top secret probation balloting. And we're determine right here, live on the air, who did the best and who wins the coveted envelope.
I don't see a trophy sitting over there.
We have some envelopes here that Monica picked out, but yes. we're just going to go through. We're looking at the pits that were mailed in, and I should mention one caveat for Barbara's pits, because Barbara's kind of a mosaic of conflicting emotions.
I'm a complicated film reviewer.
Did she get alternatives?
It was like, oh, I really like this one, but I'm afraid so and so is going to win. So we're gonna count, since these are predictions of who will win. We'll say Barbara's. I'm afraid so and so is going to win. We're going to classify that as a prediction, if it sounds fair to everybody. So just to start with the first ones that were given out last Sunday, Best Supporting Actor, J.K. Simmons. And looks like Mark picked J.K. and Barbara did and Linda did. So everybody picked J.K. That was not a tough one. Best Supporting Actress, Linda picked Patricia Arquette. And so did Mark and so did Barbara. So far,
we're seeing a theme here.
Yeah, so we know our stuff.
So we're all on the board. Going to Best Actress, and again, our panel just nailed it, which means that either they have great insight or the Vegas odds were pretty solidly on certain people's sides.
It was the year to bet in Vegas.
Yes. So everybody said Julianne Moore. Now we get to the ones that get a little interesting, which is Best Director. Let's see. The winner was the director Birdman, Pedro Iñárritu, and we had Linda said Richard Linklater, and Mark at least agreed with Linda, but they both got it wrong. Richard Linklater. And let's see, Best Director, the conflicted Barbara Bratz said,
"I wanted Linklater."
"I really liked Linklater because of that incredible investment of time and effort. That's true, but I fear Birdman's director is going to be the industry fave." So Barbara's intuition, she came out the only winner on that one for Best Director. And let's see, Best Actor. Who we got? Linda said Michael Keaton. I like Beetlejuice too, but he didn't. He didn't win that one. Mark got it right. Mark said Eddie Redmayne. And Barbara's fear factor intuition worked against her this time. She said Eddie Redmayne was amazing. That was her personal favorite. But she said, "Well, I'm afraid Michael Keaton is going to draw votes from people in the business." So Barbara didn't get that one. And let's see. I think the only one who got Best Actor, Eddie Redmayne, was Mark. So, and finally at Best Picture. Let's see. Mark said Birdman. He was correct. And going back to Barbara, the nuanced Barbara, he said Boyhood is a sentimental favorite, so I'm sticking with that. But I fear Birdman is going to win. So the panel of judges says that Barbara's prediction was Birdman. So Barbara got it. And poor Linda, she sent us two emails. At first she said,
first
she said Birdman, and then she said, I'm going to say Boyhood.
So I kind of get half a point. Yeah. I went with my heart.
Yeah.
Boyhood.
You change it. Yeah. So Linda, down on the same classification as the knight on the bridge of death, who said, "What is your favorite color?" I said, "Red." "No, blue." "Wait." He was thrown into the chasm of doom or something. So if I tally this up correctly, then in terms of the pits, we have a tie for first place, and that is Mark and Barbara tied they got five of the pits out of six, and... And we thank Monica at the station for coming up with these. And I do not know what is in, but let us present you with these handsome envelopes with a little star. And that's one for Mark and one for Barb. And I don't know what's in them, so we'll just have to find out later. Linda, from the Maverick store. We have this theater sized Twix bar.
It's gold, nice. Thank you. It's almost
gold.
Like the Lego Oscar. I'm gonna hold it right here. Thank you.
Okay, but now we'll get to some of the serious stuff, and in terms of. In terms of the outcomes of who was nominated, who won, sort of the overall results. So how do you feel? Let's go to Mark. What was your take on the results of the race this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think as you've seen, it was fairly predictable. I think the industry really showed its true colors in terms of favoring art over commercial success. I think you're seeing a lot of folks kind of on the web and blogs chatter about, some being disgruntled that American Sniper didn't do better. But, I think you, as you have in years past, seen the voters go with something that they resonated with. And it wasn't just industry factor. I disagree that Birdman, it was a favorite just because it reflected the industry, because it didn't as much in terms of certainly it did acting and ego, but it was really more about theater, first of all. And secondly, I think you did see them want to go with art. And I think a lot of the voters, what you saw was probably rejecting the art of chronicling. And I think the Boyhood, as amazing of an achievement it was, it like Selma, I think a lot of voters felt it simply chronicled an event rather than had that artistic superiority.
Well, I agree with what Mark said as far as favoring art over commercialism, but tying into a question that we're going to discuss later, and that's, what could maybe change to make the shows more popular. I think the more they do favor art over commercialism, the chance they have of becoming less popular with losing audiences. And I think this broadcast I read was 16% down over last year as far as viewership. So I wasn't disappointed for the most part, although, like I said, Boyhood was definitely my sentimental favorite, so I was a little disappointed that it didn't have more draw. But, I totally agree with art over commercialism, I think, was a big theme, and political theme this year, too, which I'm sure we'll discuss later.
Linda, in terms of any, your overall feeling?
I think I agree with my co-panelists here as well. And it was nice favoring independent art type films. I was very happy to see the nominees this year and so many Sundance alums being recognized as well, which, we hold near and dear here too. So I think, I agree. It's not for everybody, all the films that we find that we recognize for different merits. But... No, I think it was interesting. It was a little different.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting, at least to see Boyhood. You know, I think that surprised me a little bit that it got as far as Best Picture. I didn't think that it might just be deemed as a kind of an indie art picture with a gimmick of, you know, a 12-year-old story that they took 12 years to film.
But that's quite a gimmick.
Yeah, that it is. And,
I don't think that's ever been done in any other film, has it?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well,
no.
He has the trilogy with Ethan Hawke, the Before Midnight, which is similar in that it's taken decades for each picture to come out, and they reflect, you know, 10 years passage of time.
Yeah, and for those of you who have seen Boyhood, do you think it does it work as a piece of art, as a story, and beyond just the beyond just the gimmick of that they did tell this story?
Well, the biggest complaint I've heard from people who weren't as attached to it as me is that it's long, and it is, and that there was not a whole lot of action. But then it's just life. It's just glimpses of someone's life. And so to me, you know, metaphorically, that kind of is life. You know, it's not all excitement and adventure. It's just some mundane, some heartbreak, some love, you know, just different things thrown in. So I think that it was polarizing. You know, people either really, really liked it or they just weren't thrilled.
And I think it had something for everyone to connect to, again, because it is a story. It is experiences that we all go through. And that's, I think, what garnered some of the attention to it. But, you know, it was definitely in the lead up in early award season, the favorite, and then Birdman snuck in and took over.
With our time just running out a little bit before the commercial break, but anybody have any nominations for pictures that they might have wanted to see for Best Picture but didn't get nominated? If A Most Violent Year had come out earlier, I would have rooted for that as Best Picture. But any other nominations that come to mind, panel?
Well, I think obviously it was snubbed in the Best Animated Feature category, but I mean, certainly I think the Lego Movie could have squeaked in there as a nomination. I mean, the whole reason it went to 10 films is to allow a broader spectrum, and seeing an animated film is always favorable.
Okay. We'll be back with more Oscar talk right after this.
Hi, this is Jeff Lifgren of Canyons Resort Ski and Snowboard School and proud supporter of KPCW. Canyons group and private lessons are designed to build confidence, improve skills, and enjoy the mountain. More information on these classes, as well as Wednesday and Saturday First Tracks, and our locals program at canyonsresort.com.
Did you know that Utah has the highest rate of melanoma skin cancer in the United States? Join University of Utah Healthcare at Redstone for their 5 for Life Day for Women on Saturday, March 7th, where skin cancer, along with breast and cervical cancer and heart disease, will all be tested on one day. Most insurance plans are accepted, but registration is required. 435-658-9249. University of Utah Healthcare is a nonprofit organization and a proud KPCW supporter.
Hi, I'm Amy Roberts with Park City Medical Center, a proud supporter of KPCW and a not-for-profit community hospital. Park City Medical Center's Live Well Center is a wellness center designed to help you live your healthiest life possible. We use lifestyle medicine with the goal of helping you maintain or improve your health, prevent disease, and manage any existing conditions. Whether you're hoping to lose weight, gain a competitive edge, or simply live a healthier life, the Live Well Center can help. Make an appointment for a lifestyle medicine consultation by calling 435-333-3535.
East is east and west is west, and the wrong one I have chose. Let's go where you'll keep on wearing those frills.
And flowers and buttons and bows.
Buttons and bows. Yes, believe it or not, I believe that did win an Oscar for best song way back there in the late 40s. So
Oklahoma? What is it? Is that right?
The Buttons and Bows from
the
Bob Hope movie Pale Face.
Oh, didn't know that one.
We've come a long way to Eminem winning for best song for a rap tune, and I think Hustle and Flow. What was the best song? It's a hard life out there for a pimp, or so. I wanted to get back into it by asking you, as Barbara pointed out, the Oscar cast was down like 16%, and the winner, as you all said, was kind of an artsy type movie, and which raises the question of, you know, do the awards go to movies that people even bother to see? It was interesting that during the Oscar cast, I kind of liked it when Neil Patrick Harris did the bit where he's caught in his underwear and has to walk out on stage. And I, having seen Birdman and liked it, I understood that part. But if for the vast audience that had not seen Birdman, I wonder what the reaction was if they didn't even get the reference.
That was me. Yeah, same thing. I mean,
why is Neil Patrick Harris walking out in his tidy whities?
Who cares? It was the highlight of the show.
And
I mean, I think Sean Means had a good point in his article he wrote this week regarding the telecast. I think people forget the industry came up with the idea of the awards somewhat as self-promotion. It was a time when film going was in danger, and they were really trying to get audiences to see the films they thought were good. And so, and similarly, I think the ceremony reflects an allegiance to that, trying to, you know, both satire and promote the films. And I think it is a show for people who have seen the films. That said, you know, this was supposed to be hopefully third time as a charm for this executive production team, because their past two efforts had not been well received. And it turned out to be third time's a strike, you know, a strikeout, I think, because strike three and you're out. It just flopped. I think the opening sequence was outstanding. I think the biggest surprise of the evening was an Oprah Winfrey joke about money. It's like, really? He went there? You don't make fun of Oprah's money. And after all, you know, she's done and been through and what she does with it. And then, you know, and talk about it's always funny to catch people on camera with the reaction. That was probably the most uncomfortable point, is when the camera went to Oprah at that joke. And then he made it worse. He had to explain it. He was like, it was a money joke.
Well, you know what bugged me is that gratuitous Cinderella product placement in the opening sequence. And like, really? Let's just focus on Neil. Anna Kendrick didn't need to hop in.
Yeah, but the sequence reflected the best that I think Neil could have brought to the entirety of the show, because it had that edge. It had both, you know, the sentimental tribute, you know, over the top, but at the same time it had that satire that you expected from him that he's delivered in his other award shows that I think people were hoping to see throughout. And, you know, as opposed to a snooze fest of 3 hours and 40 minutes. This is the first year I've had people not stay for the entire time.
It came dangerously close to Rob Lowe and Snow White a little when I saw that, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, we should only hope, you know. In some ways, people watch Oscars for the reason they go to NASCAR. They watch it for the crashes. But before I go to Barbara, you know, Mark, when you were saying, the third time is a strike, and what Oscar shows are you referring to? I mean, this year, of course, last year was Ellen DeGeneres, and the one before that?
I can't remember. It wasn't so much the host, it was just the production team.
What's his name?
2012 and 2013, I think.
Seth MacFarlane?
Yes. Yeah. Wasn't Seth?
Yeah. I think you're right.
Yeah. I was like, who's he? I don't remember. Obviously, I don't remember his name.
Yeah. But I guess there was a sense of Harris has done so well at the other award shows that he was maybe didn't meet expectations. What was your take, Barbara?
I would say so. I think he's done it's the Emmys, I think, that he's done such a great job.
And
he's a good Tony's. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's a song and dance man, and he's great doing it. But I do think some of his jokes fell a little flat. I also wanted to go back to a remark Mark made about the purpose of the whole telecast. best and, you know, drawing what it's supposed to reflect. And I think in the pre-Oscar shows, you know, the red carpet part of it, which has gone to, what, 2-3 hours at this point, I mean, that also reflects sort of our societal demands on what they're tuning into TV for, to see the dresses, to see the stars. And I liked Reese Witherspoon's movement to ask her more. You know, that was her hashtag, to get the interviewers on the red carpet to ask deeper questions than what are you wearing and how much is your jewelry worth. And I liked that idea of trying to give the Oscars a little more meaning. That's one of the things I love about Sundance, is the Q&A, when you get to hear and see a star kind of up close and personal and get a glimpse of their real personality, not all the glam. And I think that movement to be a little deeper is worthy of exploring it in future shows too.
Well, part of what I think yields that result is just the format. I mean, it's hard to, you know, on the red carpet, you know, you've only got, in a sense, you only have time for the superficial stuff. Oh, mm-hmm. Who are you wearing? How much the jewelry? You know, how much time are you going to have to get? Asked Ella Coltrane, was it, well, you know, how did you feel about growing up in the course of a movie, and how did this affect you psychologically?
But maybe that's what needs to change. Mm-hmm. Maybe they need to go away from 2 hours of surface and just do a little bit more in-depth on a fewer people. I don't know.
Yeah, I think the best, and it was actually on the E! Red Carpet show, was the Melanie Griffith, Dakota Johnson exchange. That was real. Real mother-daughter conflict.
Yeah, and it's I wonder sometimes to what extent the people in the Oscar audience, well, first of all, if they got half a brain, they know that they you know, that the cameras might go to them at any moment, so everybody knows that the you know, they're not going to be yawning or picking their nose or doing something else, because that camera's going to go right to him. But I wonder, for instance, with the whole bit with the Octavia Spencer, please keep an eye on the secret Oscar bots. I don't know if she knew in advance that he was going to do that, and she played along, or if it, you know, they just hit her with that.
It appeared to me like they just hit her with that.
Yeah, and it just wasn't funny.
And he just kept working it.
Yeah, and it took too long. And just, you know, the jokes at the end were pretty, you know, were okay. But it just, again, at the time, it was, again, bad production, because it just interrupted the flow into the final two awards that everybody had been waiting three hours and 40 minutes for. And now we got to do one more gag before we get through to the end.
Before the announcement of the best picture.
My whiskey's gone. It's like, let's just get to this now.
And, it was hard. Octavia, I think, went along with it as best she could, but then Neil tried to drag Robert Duvall into it, and Duvall looked like a deer in the headlights, like he just woke up or something. And there was a bit where they cut to Benedict Cumberbatch, who was, you know, did this bit like he was, you know, drinking already to get through the evening, which sounds like maybe he knew that they were going to cut to him.
How about the John Travolta awkwardness?
There were a few of those. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't just one.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of nice that they worked in the whole Idina Menzel thing. That would have worked. And then he sort of went one step too far, right?
Yes. And his fashion choice of the necklace versus bow tie was interesting as well. So
Neil or Travolta's?
Travolta.
Well, I think it was kind of nice that Travolta came back to do penance.
Yep.
It was hard to tell what was it. But yeah, it sounds like everybody kind of thinks that the secret bots, that was kind of like this generation's Oprah Uma.
Mm-hmm. It seemed, though, there seemed to be a lot of inside jokes. I mean, maybe Octavia was in on it and just deadpanning it. And, you know, you think about Sean Penn's awfully timed comment at Best Picture, at the end. Yeah. And, you know, they knew each other, so he felt like he could make that comment, but the rest of the world didn't.
Some people thought it was a racist jab, and actually Penn was probably meaning it to be an opposite. Oppositely in that direction, and I think he's done. I think he's done at least one picture with
it. Yeah, they work together. Yeah. They are good friends.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So they, in terms of the whole issue again of, you know, people aren't tuning in to the Oscars because the pictures that are in the running are not things that the audience has seen. In a panel, what do you think? Should they keep striving for this kind of let's get some popular pictures into the Oscars, or just give it up and say, look, this is about awarding who we deem the best, and sometimes it's going to be artsy pictures that people don't. Maybe people don't see it, and we should just let them deal with that and quit trying to be commercially popular. What's your take?
Well, I think going back to what Mark said, it's sort of what is the purpose? You know, I think they have to maybe define their mission statement or define their purpose and then decide where they want to go. I mean, if it's industry awards nominated and voted on by people in the business, I think that's what we have to expect. I think the commercial successes could be a whole different ballgame.
Exactly. You don't need to overthink this. If you want to reward commercial success, give an Academy for the top grossing film.
Exactly.
You
know, it's
not that hard. I think, you know, a number of writers have already commented, you know, that the reward for those that do that is also self-evident. They win money. That's, you know, that's part of the purpose.
And it's not that hard to figure out.
Isn't an award for merit or isn't an award for success? I mean, that's something that, you know, you could debate for, you know, over history in terms of art, in terms of the, you know, the populist artists versus the technically proficient artists, you know, and where they cross over and where they don't. And history is full of examples, but I don't think it's, you know, just because TV ratings, you know, and again, don't think we're talking about two entirely different things. The success of an award program for film versus the success of TV ratings and popular culture, which are, you know, are two different things, and that's okay. So at the same time, I think in terms of I think the bigger question and more poignant question is, what does the success of the Oscars mean towards the historical challenges or the future challenges that movie going faces? And does if you have a depopularization of the Oscars, will it adversely impact people going to films? I don't think so.
The awards themselves might not have to change, but maybe it's something we don't have to watch. I mean, if it's the industry giving itself awards and it's not popular as a TV show, you know, have the awards, have the night, don't televise it.
I think the Oscars are a classic. Everyone will tune in. It's something, you know, it's a broad audience. And I like your idea, Mark, of just maybe recognizing top grossing film there as well. But I think if they were to just, again, put in the gratuitous films or have them there just for the ratings, it takes away from the authenticity. And, you know, I can see right through that, but I'm a film fan lover, so, but I just think
if you look at the other industry standards, you know, almost nobody watches the Tony Awards show, and that's probably the best one that's done because it's done by people that do shows, and it's always outstanding. And Clio Awards that used to happen for best commercials, nobody watched. It was the best award show out there because it was done by people that did advertising. It mm-hmm. was fantastic and incredibly funny, but it's not going to, you know, it's not going to impact the art of the product.
Tony's don't draw an audience because how many people in the country get to see the nominees on stage?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah.
Looking back at some things like, well, you know, the outpouring of affection for the tribute to the Sound of Music there. I mean, can't we occasionally get back to a picture that is both popular with an audience and respected by the Academy? You know, the Sound of Music type of film, the Titanic type of film. And of course, some years you'll have The English Patient, but
well, they haven't made Sound of Music type films recently. I can't recall.
Yeah,
just big production musicals and, you know, just to escape.
Or Dart Sound of Music, Into the Woods.
Yeah, I guess they are. But yeah, I just, you know, those are, they're fun, but they don't come along that often.
Hmm. Well, I think it certainly, you know, was one of the few highlights of the program, whether you liked it or not, in terms of agreeing that Lady Gaga should sing that. She nailed it, and it was very, you know, it was a great performance, and that helped, you know, that segment of the show, and it was a nice transition into the award to have Julie Andrews give the next award for best song. I think it was best song or best, whichever, what was one of the music awards. Might, and so yeah, right, that might, all related. That segment worked.
Best soundtrack score.
And it almost made up for having, you know, not having the film clips in the tribute section,
which
we'll get to later.
No, I think I agree. That was a nice way, production-wise, to blend that together and to also bring in the new and the old. And Gaga was amazing.
Yeah, that was. Go ahead, Barbara.
No, I was just going to say, talking about bringing in the old, that's one of the things I was thankful for this year, that none of the aging stars that they sometimes bring out, just maybe a little too late in their lifetime to really present well on stage. I mean, I find myself holding my breath that they don't make a serious error or fall over or whatever. And the stars that they brought out, Shirley MacLaine at 80, man, she looked great and was spry and energetic. And I do love seeing the older actors and actresses, but we are losing so many of them. And sometimes
I think a year ago or 2 years ago, they brought out Kim Novak,
who's
not a tribute to the powers of plastic surgery.
Twitter went abuzz after that one. Uh-huh. And where was Jack? You know, I always look for Jack.
Yeah, that would have been neat.
Yeah.
If they're not quite, you know, in shape, some of the old stars, I think it's nice to bring them out if they're in shape, you know, if they're coming out in the walker or something or the wheelchair or something.
Not that we have any less respect for their career or anything, but I just think sometimes that's a really uncomfortable moment for everyone, really.
Yeah, and I think it's always done with good intentions in terms of honoring someone that previously probably was snubbed or historically hasn't gotten the recognition that they deserved from the Academy. And it just, I agree, it usually goes wrong. And that's where I think they could insert more use of that person's clips. And because I think those are always extremely emotional. And I mean, that's the whole reason people were here, is you're resonating with, you know, something on the screen, and yet invariably they're putting less and less on the screen of the award ceremony.
I do recommend, I'm sorry, if CNN did a really great documentary about the Oscars, if it was aired the night before, and if you have a chance to look it up, it was fascinating. So again, getting the history and really going way back to some of the performances you mentioned, Rick. So.
Well, maybe when we get to the next segment, we'll get to one of my bonus questions, which is, what would you change about the Oscars, the contest, or the award show? And we'll get more into the meat of that after this break.
Gorgoza Park is a proud supporter of KPCW. With 7 lift-lighted tubing lanes, mini snowmobile rides, Fort Frosty play area, and more. There's more to the mountain than skiing and snowboarding. Gorgoza Park, day or night, daily through April 12th. GorgozaPark.com.
Wyndham Vacation Rentals is happy to continue our support for KPCW for the upcoming ski season. For over 30 years, our local staff has been managing rental properties throughout Park City, providing nightly rentals with a range of services and amenities for every visitor's vacation. We can be reached at 649-6606 or online at wvrparkcity.com.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper. Join me each week here on KPCW for the Splendid Table. We give you a fresh take on the subject of food with great attitude and originality. We look at the way food plays out in your life. It opens you up to the world around you and the Park City community. Each week you get tips, recipes, and everyday culinary know-how. The Splendid Table reminds us of the essential role breaking bread together holds in our world. That's The Splendid Table, Sunday mornings at 9, right here on 91.9 and 88.1 FM. KPCW.
Sponsored by River Horse on Main.
Doe, a deer, a female deer. Ray, a drop of golden sun. Me, a name I call myself.
As back to our Oscar show, and appropriately with the Sound of Music, you know, I couldn't help having a cynical thought when Julie Andrews said, well, everyone loved working on the movie, and it's a good thing they didn't bring out Christopher Plummer, who I think did not, you know, think it was his best movie and sometimes called it the Sound of Mucus. So, but I asked you guys beforehand, are there any changes that you would make to the Oscar show or the process? Like, I always loved Roger Ebert's suggestion that they release the vote totals. So that would be great to find out, you know, if somebody won because, you know, two other actors from another film split the vote and et cetera. But it's a great idea that they will never in a million years ever do. But you got some idea, Linda, you got some ideas for what you would do to change the Oscars?
I do. I actually kind of thought about this coming from a second screen perspective because I was following my Twitter feed while I was watching the Oscars, and I like having that conversation. But I think, you know, kind of off that idea that you mentioned, Rick, to have a way for public to, you know, you can do a Twitter poll, have public choose as the categories are coming up, and then maybe that could be broadcast afterwards. It's a great sponsorship opportunity for someone like Entertainment Weekly or whatever, but just to show the public selection, the public vote. Also, you know, sometimes when political season, you're watching debates and they'll do the audience monitoring and sentiment. That would be another thing to kind of fun to watch along the bottom of the screen, or a Twitter ticker as well, kind of highlighting some tweets. Definitely safe for TV tweets, but just engaging with the audience a little bit more and feeling like as a viewer, you can contribute and share your reaction.
So after Neil Patrick does a joke or something, the Twitter feed under will say, my God, bombed. That stunk.
Or just that sort of sentiment. You can see it go way down. And then bring back Billy, please. Billy Crystal. I love him. He's just probably the best host. Mm-hmm. And keep it at 3 hours or less. I'm not sure what else you can trim. Shortening some of those, I don't know. It's always a challenge. You want folks to get recognized for their work. But
I have one idea.
3:40 is too long.
Get to my turn. But anyway, Barbara.
You know, I can't really say that I have any ideas to add to that. I haven't moved into the whole realm of Twitter or anything. I like Linda's ideas about those technological ways that an audience can participate. I just kind of go back to, I think a great host really makes or breaks it. Or as Mark said, it's not just the host, it's a directing team. I don't have any other things to add other than Mark's award.
It's not my suggestion. It was just if they want to do that, they could. That's how they, you know, give an award for commercial success if that's what they want to do. I don't. No, I've already said more film clips. I think that those have always gone over well in the section where they honor those that have passed away in the prior year. And I think they could incorporate that more. But I do think, you know, building off things we could learn from the success of things on television now, incorporating that audience factor would certainly be huge. I like, you know, if you look at something like Chopped, the food shows, you know, in terms of that, you know, that explanation component or the, you know, building upon having everyone standing right there and then they go to one, kind of like the end of the more traditional award ceremonies and the pageants, they try to do that with the cameras, but that's always invariably awkward. And you don't, you know, so I think they could do something with that that's a little more compelling that would make it, you know, build on that suspense rather than having, you know, the last year's award winner, you know, read off a teleprompter and decide whether they want to muck up their line or not.
Anyone else have any ideas for how to speed things up, or are there some things that are, you know, seem a little extraneous? Or
can you think of a I can't think of a category. Yeah. Cut? Would you?
Yeah. They've already pared down.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Yeah. The technical stuff's done.
Yeah. I know a few years ago they tried to speed things up in some of the lesser awards by like best sound editing or something. They would invite everybody up on stage at once to cut down on the time when the winner walked up there. Mm-hmm. And that kind of turned out to be awkward. You'd invite all the winners up there and all the nominees and then say, and the winner is Joe Blow, and all the other losers, you can go away now.
Well, and I think, too, with the acceptance speeches, everyone – is pretty good about keeping it brief, but you don't want to cut them off. That's so disrespectful. That's their time to shine. Yeah. And obviously, if they're going to go 5 minutes, that's a little much.
I'd rather have the lead-ins shorten or in obviously, you know, the musical performances are something they've enhanced, and you know, you can certainly trim those down a little.
Yeah, and or to spice things up, don't try to play them off. If they're talking too long, send in security. Let's spice up the show by having the guards come in and chase the guy around.
He's
running around, eluding the people running around the stage and saying, "And I want to thank my agent who believed in this project from the very beginning. Get your hands off me, Dad." So you could, you know, introduce a little drama or slapstick to the show. But I think the most immediate thing I would do is some changes to the in memoriam, which is it was nice to have Merrill introduce it and then and show the people the deceased with appropriately the music from Sophie's Choice, but why Jennifer Hudson had to be brought on for this prolonged forgettable song, basically. I never met these people, but I'm sorry they're dead, yada, yada. I would rather take some more time with the in memoriam. And number one, they've turned down the audience applause.
I thought that was a good move.
Oh, I kind of like the applause-o-meter to see who gets the most emotional outpouring. And maybe do some recognition that certainly there are some names that people will be touched by more than others, and do a little with the appearance of, say, Robin Williams or Mickey Rooney, or introduce a clip or a couple of clips from their career that, you know, Mickey Rooney just passes by briefly, and you don't do any recognition for a guy who has been in, has had films in every decade since the 20s. If there was something in there for some film clip or maybe a brief comment from someone who worked with them. I would have even liked a little bit of, say, Sean Levy, the guy who directed the Night of the Museum movies, and talked about how it felt working on the third movie with the last appearance of Mickey Rooney and the near last appearance of Robin Williams. Have a moment like that. Allow him some time to talk rather than have Jennifer Hudson singing the meaningless song.
Yeah, it's an area that the Academy's really struggled with, obviously, just in terms of the criticism for the choices of who's in, who's out. Yeah. And there's been no leadership shown and no ownership of the process. And it's, you know, all you hear from them is deflection. And, you know, at best, you might get, you know, an emailed, you know, response like they did with Joan Rivers' exclusion this year, explaining, you know, sort of why she wasn't. And, you know, it's just, you know, I think it's one area they should just really embrace to own, because it I think it used to be one of the most popular sections, and it's become just the opposite.
Yeah. And some you have to deal with. I mean, as awesome as Joan Rivers was in the entertainment world, her profile in movies was not that big. I mean, she was
Spaceballs. I mean,
Spaceballs, yeah. The voice of Dot Matrix. Maybe. I mean, in a year from now, we'll probably hear the same debate about Leonard Nimoy, about whether he will be in the in memoriam. Although he's,
I hope not. I hope we don't have that debate. I mean, that'll be absurd if he's not in.
You know, for somebody for the director of Three Men and a Baby, and a guy who was in half a dozen Star Trek movies, you would think he would get a, and not to mention his brief appearance in Them, the giant ant movie from the 50s. Come on,
missed that one.
In terms of, you know, Barbara, I think, mentioned it, that the conundrum of who can host this. Everybody always says the hosting job is an impossible job until they find the right person to do it. And maybe Billy Crystal's era is a little past, but we just have to figure out how to find the next Billy Crystal.
Yeah, the problem with that is I think the the popular sentiment is, hey, you need to go younger, funnier, more adaptable, kind of like they attempted to do with Neil Patrick Harris. The problem is the industry isn't quite ready for that, right? Because he, as the Oprah joke showed, you know, there was a little bit of age discrimination in that audience. They don't like to be made fun of by the up-and-comer. Mm. You got to kind of earn the right to make fun of people in the industry a little bit. And so it's a tough slot to fill. And I think that's, you know, why I think, you know, hopefully they'll gravitate towards I think Neil Patrick Harris should be given a second shot. I think he could evolve into that role because he's got enough chops. But it'll be interesting to see what they do moving forward.
You think the jibes feel a little bit better coming? Well, Billy Crystal maybe is more of a colleague and not some snotty young kid, or you know, the classic example, Bob Hope, who seems like he did it forever.
Yeah, the signature host.
Yeah,
I know Billy won't do it, right? But that's what they need, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to see him bring
the consistency.
Know, I think Jon Stewart could bring could do it again,
great,
and so you know, and give him another shot because he did it in, forget how long ago, but
past 5 or 6 years.
I know in some of the reviews I saw Jimmy Fallon suggested.
Oh yeah, he's still on the younger side of that, but yeah.
And that kind of would Tina Fey and Amy Poehler. I would kind of favor giving them a shot if they were willing to do it. They can't do worse than James Franco and Anne Hathaway.
Next.
Next. Well, heck, our time is drawing to a close, so maybe I should try my other bonus question, which is we want to send you into the past, panelists, and imagine that we have the hot tub time machine, and you are able to go back in time to an Oscar ceremony, and you could change the results, and you could leap up on stage and take the Oscar away from that undeserving recipient and give it to the person that year who should have gotten it. Anybody want to jump in on that? Who wants to be the first one to go back in time and correct an Oscar win?
Oh, well, I'll take the easiest one, 1941, Best Picture, How Green Was My Valley, in a year that it could have gone to either Citizen Kane or Maltese Falcon. That's ridiculous.
Even from Daryl F. Zanuck, you would have gone, leaped on stage and ripped it away from it.
Yeah.
Okay. Barbara?
I don't think I would have taken it. I can't think of anyone that I would have taken it away from. But I think it was 94 when Tom Hanks beat out Morgan Freeman for Shawshank Redemption. And Shawshank is one of my favorites of all time. And I love Morgan Freeman. So I would have whipped out another Oscar to give to Morgan Freeman.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have a number, but among them would be, one of mine would have been in favor of Tom Hanks. I think it would have gone back in 1998, I think, and when Roberto Benigni won for Life is Beautiful. Yeah, okay, it was cute that he walked on the chairs and everything, but I would have said, thank you, Roberto, but we're going to give this one to Tom Hanks for Saving Private Ryan, and give Tom his third Oscar in a decade. As Hanks had one of the most incredible decades of any film actor, and I would have given him that third Oscar. But I have some other ones that come to mind. But Linda,
that year as well, Shakespeare in Love won over Saving Private Ryan, so that was another maybe industry art selection, technical selection. And then Forrest Gump winning over Pulp Fiction. And Pulp Fiction is an amazing film, but that was sort of the opposite in terms of going with more commercially successful. I always think back to Marissa Tomei in that year. And you know, just in kind of going through some notes, getting ready for today and looking at her competitors, I don't remember back in terms of those other performances really standing out, but it did seem like a was that really? Is that a typo?
Yes. Well, have you heard the Marissa Tomei urban legend?
Yeah, it is an urban legend. They were talking about it on the Classified show last week, I think. Jack Palance. Palance is the one who made the announcement. But supposedly that is a myth.
I actually have here that a Price Waterhouse accountant explained that if such an event occurred, we have an agreement with the Academy that one of us would step on stage, introduce ourselves, and say the presenter misspoke. So there is a measure there, just to fill in the audience.
The year she won for My Cousin Vinny, the rumor was that the Palance, for some reason, the drunk or confused or whatever, got screwed up and mistakenly read her name as the winner. And I think that there was even some the legend was that the actual winner had been Judy Davis for Husbands and Wives or something. But
she was against Vanessa Redgrave, Marina Richardson, Joan Plowright. It's tough.
So if you went back over the annals, there's so many, you know, corrected Oscars. You jump up in 52, the best picture was the Greatest Show on Earth, you know, Cecil B. DeMille's Circus Picture. And looking back, and I think a lot of people would want to jump up on stage and sorry, Cecil, we'll give it to you for 10 Commandments in 40 years. But right now it goes to High Noon, maybe happen. Or even way back, you know, anybody ever remember a picture called Cavalcade, 1933? That was the best picture winner that year. It was kind of a stodgy early version of – it was kind of an upstairs-downstairs thing. And that was the movie where you see the young British couple taking their honeymoon on an ocean liner and saying, "Our life is all before us. It's all wonderful." And then they go down to they step out, and there's a little sign behind them that says Titanic. They actually did that in a picture.
Well, and I think Godfather lost. I forget who beat out Godfather the year.
It won Best Picture, I think. But all the lesser awards, Cabaret won.
Oh, that's it. No, Cabaret beat out Godfather for a category, I remember.
Well, for a lot of categories, but Godfather took Best Picture. But my Best Director was Bob Fosse, not...
That's it, was Best Director.
Not Francis Ford Coppola.
Bob Fosse beat out Francis Ford Coppola. Yeah, that's another shocker.
Yeah, or I would even go, I think, 99 instead of American Rose for Best Picture. I'd really go... absolute radical. Take it away and give it to the Steven Soderbergh movie, Out of Sight, the one with, you know, Jennifer Lopez and George Clooney in the car trunk. That one would even be a better Best Picture selection. But we can't change history. all we can do is hope for better results in the future and that we will all be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed when we get the panel together in the summer and ponder the commercial box office winners that maybe they'll win Mark's new award for box office champ.
So, any predictions? Anything coming online in that category?
I don't yet in terms of the money makers. Yeah, that's not usually what I study up on.
And the new Star Wars isn't out yet. But thanks to Lynn Jager and Barbara Bratz.
That was fun.
And Mr. Mark Harrington. Thank you, sir.
Have a good weekend, everybody.
Okay.